Welcome to the Baird Group Corporate Restructuring Review for April 2011, brought to you by the editors of Troubled Company Reporter and Troubled Company Prospector. In this month's Corporate Restructuring Review, we'll discuss five topics. First, last month's largest Chapter 11 filings. Second, large Chapter 11 filings TCR editors anticipate in the near term. Third, a quick review of the major pending disputes in Chapter 11 cases that we monitor day by day. Fourth, reminders about debtors whose emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed. And fifth, information you'll unlikely to find elsewhere about new publicly traded securities being issued by Chapter 11 debtors. Now let's review the largest Chapter 11 cases in April 2011. Danilo Munoz reports that the number of Chapter 11 filings involved companies with assets in excess of $100 million has risen slightly in April. There were eight such filings last month. Four of the first 4 months of 2011, a total of 25 companies with assets of at least $100 million filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, or an average of six companies per month. There were six companies with assets of at least $100 million that filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in March 2011, six in February 2011, and five in January 2011. In comparison, during the first 4 months of 2010, there were a total of 41 mega cases, seven mega cases in April that year, 12 in March, seven in February, and 15 in January. That's an average of about 10 mega cases per month. The decline in the number of mega cases for the first 4 months of the year compared to last year's was about 45%. For fiscal year 2010, there were a total of 105 mega cases on an average of about 9 per month. There were no billion-dollar bankruptcies in April. Year-to-date, $2 billion companies have tumbled into the bankruptcy courts, Borders Group and MSR Resort Golf Course, both of which filed in February. During the same four-month period in 2010, there was no Chapter 11 filings involving assets of in excess of $1 billion. The largest Chapter 11 filing last month was by Indianapolis Downs LLC, which estimated assets of $500 million to $1 billion in its petition. Indianapolis Downs filed for Chapter 11 protection on April 7th with the Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware. Indianapolis Down operates a racino, which is combined racetrack and casino, at the state-of-the-art 283-acre site in Shelbyville, Indiana. It also operates two satellite wagering facilities in Evansville and Clarksville, Indiana. Gregory F. Rayburn, Chief Restructuring Officer of the Indianapolis Downs, relates in a court filing, "Despite the success of 2010, the debtors faced certain operational issues inherent in the early stages of the gaming facility and financial issues, primarily their ability to service long-term debt incurred because of an initial $250 million state-mandated license fee and a high statutory tax rate." The second largest filing was by Sbarro Incorporated, which listed $471 million in total assets and $486 million in total liabilities as of the petition date. Sbarro's filed for Chapter 11 on April 4th with the Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of New York in Manhattan. Melville, New York-based Sbarro, is a global Italian quick-service restaurant concept with roughly 5,170 employees, 1,045 restaurants throughout 42 countries, and an annual revenue of in excess of $300 million at the time of filing. Sbarro said it has reached an agreement with all of its second lien secured lenders and approximately 70% of its senior note holders on the terms of the reorganization plan that will eliminate more than half of the company's total indebtedness. Judge Shelley C. Chapman recently gave a final approval to the Sbarro's $35 million debtor-in-possession financing package as an attorney revealed that a foreign strategic buyer was courting the company. Meanwhile, Majestic Capital bankruptcy filing ranked the third largest last month. Majestic Capital reported $436 million in total assets and $420 million in total liabilities. Hamilton, Bermuda-based Majestic Capital, through its subsidiaries, is a specialty provider of workers' compensation insurance products and services. According to its annual report, the company had more than 1,032 policyholders with an average annual workers' compensation primary insurance policy premium of $87,000 as of December 31st, 2010. On April 27th, Majestic Capital announced that it received a notification from the California Department of Insurance that the DOI Insurance Commissioner had placed his principal subsidiary, Majestic Insurance Company, into conservation and rehabilitation proceedings. The Commissioner simultaneously filed a motion seeking approval for a proposed rehabilitation plan where Majestic Insurance Insurance's insurance liabilities and certain assets will be transferred to AmTrust North America Incorporated. The fourth largest Chapter 11 filing was by Satellites Mexicanos S.A. de C.V. and affiliates Alterna TV International Corporation and Alterna TV Corporation, which filed on April 6 with bankruptcy court for the District of Delaware. Satmex is a Mexico-based provider of fixed satellite services in the Americas, with coverage to more than 90% of the population to the Americas, including more than 45 nations and territories. Satmex also provides Latin American television program to the United States. In its schedule, Satmex disclosed $393 million in total assets, $457 million in total debts on a standalone basis. This is Satmex's second trip to Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Satmex first filed in August of 2006 in New York bankruptcy court and exited 4 months later with a plan to repay creditors owed about $743 million with new debt and equity. In the 2011 case, Satmex filed simultaneously with its bankruptcy petition a restructuring plan supported by note holders. Satmex announced late March that it had reached an agreement with the holders of more than two-thirds of the outstanding principal amount of its first priority senior secured notes due 2011 and the second priority senior secured notes due 2013 to support a prepackaged plan. Delaware bankruptcy judge Christopher S. Sanchi, who handles the case, set a combined hearing May 11th to consider approval of the disclosure statement and confirmation of Satmex's Chapter 11 plan. Another large Chapter 11 filing in April were filed by Waterscape Resort LLC, which sought bankruptcy court protection on April 5th with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Southern District of New York after defaulting on loan payments. Waterscape Resort owns the 45-story Casa Hotel and Residence in Midtown Manhattan. The company estimated more than $100 million each in assets and debts as of the bankruptcy filing. Prior to the bankruptcy filing, Waterscape Resort executed a contract to sell its hotel assets for $126 million, plus a payment of $2 million related to a certain mortgage tax savings that the buyer would realize on the transaction. Waterscape filed a bankruptcy case to address both its obligations to secured lenders and its numerous mechanics liens disputes. Another case was by Bow Systech Incorporated, which, along with its affiliates, filed Chapter 11 petitions on April 18th with the Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware, estimated debt of $100 million to $500 million. The company, based in Wheeling, Illinois, claims to be one of two leaders nationally in high-volume production mail solutions, offering combination of hardware and services and software to volume mailers worldwide, including financial and insurance firms, government agencies, service bureaus, utilities, and direct mail firms and others. Bow Bell & Howell sought Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in the U.S. as part of a deal to itself to creditors Versa Capital Management Incorporated to pay off debt. Bow Bell & Howell said it has entered into an asset purchase agreement with Versa, under which Versa and its co-investors partner, Access Value Investors Incorporated, would acquire substantially all of the company's assets. Versa holds a majority of the company's outstanding secured debt, which will be resolved through the sale. Peregrine I, LLC, another large case filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection with the Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware on April 25th, estimating assets and debts of in excess of $100 million. Headquartered in the Cayman Islands, Petergreen 1 is an offshore drilling company backed by a unit of General Electric Company. Rounding the list of April mega cases is Miranda Homes Incorporated, which along with its affiliates filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy with the Bankruptcy Court for the Western District of Pennsylvania. Miranda Homes, citing its inability to renegotiate credit terms, estimated assets of $100 million to $500 million in debt and of $50 million to $100 million. Miranda, based in Clinton, Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh, builds homes in Florida, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Kentucky. Mr. Munoz also reports that two of the last month's mega cases were prepackaged or pre-negotiated in nature. Year to date, 8 of the 25 mega cases had prepackaged Chapter 11 plans of the petition date, or about 33% of the mega cases. For fiscal year 2010, a total of 35 prepackaged or prearranged cases were filed, about one in every three filings in 2010. Of the April mega cases, four went to Delaware, three went to Southern District of New York, and the last went to the Western District of Pennsylvania in Pittsburgh. In March, four mega cases went to Delaware, one went to New Jersey, and the last filed in Puerto Rico. In February, three went to the Southern District of New York, one went to Delaware, one went to the Southern District of Texas, and one went to the Middle District of Georgia. Of the January mega cases, four went to Delaware, and the remaining mega cases went to the Northern District of Texas. For the first four months of 2011, 13 mega cases went to Delaware, and seven went to the Southern District of New York. Lehman Brothers Holding Corporation remains the biggest corporate bust in history. Lehman, which filed in 2008, had $639 billion in total assets and $613 billion in total debts at the time of the filing. Now, let's turn to the topic of Chapter 11 filings, troubled company reporter editors anticipate in the near term. Carlo Fernandez compiled a list of three large companies he's convinced are nearing Chapter 11 bankruptcy: Bankers Footwear, Jackson Hewitt, and Dingy. St. Louis, Missouri-based Bankers Footwear Company Incorporated, a national mall-based specialty retailer for women's footwear and accessories, said that it had positive sales trends beginning in June 28 through April 2011. However, its ability to maintain its liquidity position is highly dependent on sustaining these sales trends. The company noted that net losses in the recent years have negatively impacted its liquidity and financial position. According to the company, absent the positive sales trends, it would have to obtain additional sources of liquidity or take additional cost-cutting measures. If we cannot obtain needed financing, our operations may be materially negatively impacted, and we may be forced into bankruptcy or to cease operations, and you could lose your investment in the company, Bankers Footwear said in an annual report filed with the Securities Exchange Commission. Ernst & Young LLP, the editor, has expressed substantial doubt about Bankers Footwear's ability to continue as a going concern. The independent auditors noted that the company has incurred substantial losses from the operation in recent years and has a significant working capital deficiency. The company's balance sheet on January 29, 2011 showed $48.01 million in total assets and $53.99 million in total liabilities. Jackson Hewitt Tax Service Incorporated has amended its credit agreement, giving it an extra 3 weeks until May 20th to make a principal payment and strike a restructuring deal with its lender. The company said it negotiated an amendment to its credit agreement with Wells Fargo to have additional time for the company, and the lenders agreed to upon a mutual satisfactory restructuring. The company had previously revealed that it was attempting to negotiate a restructuring of its balance sheet with its lenders, including a possible prepackaged bankruptcy. Jackson Hewitt, a tax return preparation service provider, had $316 million in total assets and $378 million in total liabilities as of October 31, 2010. Dingy Incorporated has hired bankruptcy advisors for its potential debt restructuring. Dingy is also in talks with lenders about amending its credit facility, as it likely won't satisfy financial covenants later this year. The company credit facility consists of a $1.08 billion revolving credit facility and an $850 million term letter of credit facility and a $68 million senior secured term loan facility. The company is compliant with the EBITDA to consolidate interest expense covenants as of March 31, 2010. However, Dingy projects it will not be in compliance with the covenant beginning in the third or fourth quarter. To continue as a going concern over the next 12 months, the company said it must, in the near term, meet the financial covenants so that it can access its credit facility, amend or replace its credit facility, or obtain a waiver of certain of its requirements, or otherwise secure additional capital. Dingy's credit facility includes a revolving credit facility which has undrawn capacity of $649 million at March 31, 2011, and expires by its term on April 2, 2012. We are currently discussing with lenders the terms upon which the amendment to the credit facility or new credit facility could be implemented. We expect the capacity of any amended or new credit facilities to be less than the current capacity of $1 billion and to be at a higher cost, the company said. In April, Dingy announced that the law firm of White & Case, LLP, and the financial advisory firm of Lazard, Ferrers & Company, LLC, have been retained to advise the company and the Finance and Restructuring Committee of Dingy's Board of Directors on the debt restructuring activities. The purpose of the committee is to undertake a comprehensive review of Dingy's various restructuring alternatives, including, without limitation, if appropriate, reviewing and evaluating possible changes to the capital structure of Dingy, including the issuance, repurchase, or repayment of indebtedness or equity securities and possible sales of Dingy assets. Investment bank Houlihan Lokey is advising Dingy creditors. Through its subsidiaries, Houston, Texas-based Dingy Incorporated produces and sells electric energy capacity and ancillary services in key U.S. markets. Dingy had $9.8 billion in total assets and $7.1 billion in total liabilities as of March 31, 2011. It incurred a net loss of $77 million on $505 million of revenue for 3 months ending March 31, 2011, compared to its net income of $145 million on $858 million of revenue in the same period, 2010. In addition to the challenged companies mentioned in Mr. Fernandez's report, the Trouble Company Reporter provides ongoing reporting about more than 3,000 companies experiencing financial distress or restructuring their balance sheets in a judicial proceeding. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Next, we'll quickly review major pending disputes in three large Chapter 11 cases that Troubled Company Reporter editors monitor day to day. Ivy Magdanaro identified two major disputes in the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. The disputes involve litigation between the trustee of Four Lehman's brokerage unit and Barclays PLC, and the company's own suit against J.P. Morgan Chase in an effort to recover billions of dollars for Lehman creditors. According to Ms. Magdalero, Barclays scored another victory against Lehman's, As bankruptcy judge James Peck for the Southern District of New York said in May 9th hearing that he would not oppose an agreement by the trustee of Lehman's Brokers Unit, James Giddens, to pay Barclays $1.1 billion related to securities clearing. The trading assets from which the $1.1 billion would be taken are held in the so-called clearance boxes to clear trades. Barclays previously argued that those assets should have been transferred into it in September of 2008 when Barclays sought Lehman's North American broker unit business. The Lehman Brothers liquidation trustee originally said it only owed $869 million on those trading assets, while Barclays said the value of some of the securities have gone up and that should receive more than $1 billion. The Lehman trustees subsequently conceded to the $1 billion payment amount. However, another $2 billion in margin assets are on the dispute. The margin assets refer to disputes held to back trades. On April 28th, the Lehman trustee demanded $2.1 billion of those margin assets from Barclays plus 9% interest. Judge Peck declined not to rule on the continuing margin assets dispute at the May 9th hearing. He said the issue will need some thought and added that another hearing date will be set for it. Judge Peck, however, said the demand for margin is consistent with a ruling he issued in February 2011 compelling Barclays to pay or return any cash it had taken in the broker unit sale deal. The judge made the comment after Barclays lawyer David Boies said that the negotiations over the margin assets dispute have reached the end of the road. Mr. Boies said Barclays understood the February 2011 ruling to exclude non-cash margins. Barclays said it of a total of $4 billion in margin and about $1.5 billion involved securities maturing in more than 3 months and about $640 million of non-cash margin had maturities longer than 15 years. Judge Peck questioned why he was not informed at the trial that some of the margin were invested in long-term securities. The Barclays attorney explained that the argument at the trial was whether Barclays should pay cash and cash equivalents. The February 2011 ruling entered by Judge Peck followed a three-way fight where one, Barclays said it was owed $3 billion in purchase of Lehman broker unit. Two, the Lehman trustee demanded $7 billion from Barclays. And three, the New York-based Lehman parent company sought an alleged $11 billion windfall Barclays made on the broker unit purchase. On February 22nd, Judge Peck held that the broker unit sale transaction was fair, even as the sale process was less than perfect. Thus, the Lehman parent and the Lehman trustee lost their bid to recover the alleged $11 billion windfall. The judge went on and also held that Barclays should return any cash it may have received from the broker unit sale. He, however, left it to the parties to work out the exact dollar amounts that should be changed hands. If the parties cannot agree on how much is owed and by whom, the courts may have to reopen the trial and compute the exact numbers. Until the court puts dollar amounts into the February 22nd decision, neither side can appeal. On April 29th, Lehman's wrote the bankruptcy judge a letter seeking fines for failing to pay bonuses to the UK bank agreed to when it bought Lehman Brothers Unit. The day before, the Barclays asked the court to clarify which assets it is entitled to in relation to its purchase of Lehman's unit. Barclays argues that it had paid all promised bonuses. Lehman and two other creditor groups have proposed competing Chapter 11 plans. Hearing on the three plans before Judge Peck have been scheduled for June 28th. In April 2011, Lehman, the official committee of the unsecured creditors appointed to its case, sought dismissal of the amended counterclaims filed by J.P. Morgan in a billion-dollar lawsuit among the parties. Lehman sued J.P. Morgan of insider information to extract $8.6 billion of assets from the estate in 2008. J.P. Morgan was Lehman's clearing bank at the time it filed for bankruptcy protection. J.P. Morgan filed a countersuit in December 2010 and amended it in February 2011. J.P. Morgan said Lehman left it with billions in unpaid secured loans by bad assets left out in the Lehman Barclays sale deal. Lehman asserts that J.P. Morgan's counterclaims are contingent and that if J.P. Morgan has a legitimate dispute, it is with Barclays and not with it. Lehman maintains it cannot be held liable for allegedly representing that Barclays would later acquire all of Lehman's broker business or concealing that Barclays would not, in fact, purchase all of those assets. Lehman, who notes that J.P. Morgan supported the sale and executed two release settlements with Barclays in relation to those transactions, but never voiced accusations of Lehman's wrongdoing. Lehman asserts that it is now untimely for J.P. Morgan to come up with a story that Lehman's conspired with Barclays to harm J.P. Morgan with respect to the subject securities. Meanwhile, James Giddings, the liquidation trustee for the Lehman brokerage unit, said he has negotiated a settlement with J.P. Morgan where the clearing bank has agreed to return more than $800 million of cash and securities to resolve the trustee's claims. The assets include $755 million of cash and about $106 million of securities. The settlement is said to be the biggest affirmative settlement for Lehman's customers. Despite the J.P. Morgan settlement, though, the Lehman trustee still needs to resolve $42.7 billion in claims. According to Ms. Magdalaro, the plan approval process in the bankruptcy case of Tribune Company is still ongoing before bankruptcy judge Kevin Carey of the District of Delaware. Resolution of the disputed $13 billion leveraged buyout of the company in 2007 is also pending. Two competing plans are before the court, one backed by Tribune, the creditors committee, Oak Tree Capital, Angelo Gordon, and J.P. Morgan, and the other by Aurelius Capital Management, Deutsche Bank, Law Debenture Trust, and Wilmington Trust. The Tribune-backed plan contemplates lawsuit releases for some of the buyout lenders parties, but not the company directors and officers. The Aurelius-backed plan calls for prosecution of all buyout parties. Entities and personalities connected to the buyout are lenders J.P. Morgan Chase and Merrill Lynch Capital Corporation, Mr. Zell, and other Tribune directors and officers. Confirmation hearing commenced in March, and the initial phase was completed in April. Post-trial briefs are due in May. Closing arguments are set for June 14th. Another round of amendments was filed by the plan proponents to their plan versions in April, but both Tribune and Aurelius changed the form of payment being offered to the other side under the plans, but neither gave up more value to the other. The proponents don't expect the plan changes to alter the results of the already solicited votes. Judge Carey is expected to enter a ruling May 17th on Tribune's request to send out ballots again and Aurelius decisions not to resolicit votes in light of perceived notion that senior lenders will not change their mind after years of fighting with bondholders. Tribune is the second largest newspaper published in the United States. It filed for bankruptcy December 2008. The troubled company reporter provides detailed reporting about every Chapter 11 filing nationwide. Stay tuned to learn more about obtaining a trial subscription to the TCR at no cost or obligation. Julianne Lopez reports about three Chapter 11 debtors whose emergence from Chapter 11 has been delayed: Tribune Company, W.R. Grace & Company, Lehman Brothers, and Washington Mutual. In Tribune, the court on April 14, 2011, completed the initial phase of confirmation hearing in connection with the competing Chapter 11 plans filed by the debtors, the creditors committee, Oak Tree Capital, Angelo Gordon, and J.P. Morgan, and Aurelius Capital Management, Deutsche Bank, Law Debenture Trust, and Wilmington Trust. At the April 14th hearing, the court established a tentative briefing and closing argument schedule. At a hearing held on April 21st, the court further set certain deadlines and requirements for the confirmation hearing briefing and directing the counsel confer and file a form of order embodying the briefing schedule discussed on the record. At the conclusion of the April 14th hearing, the plan proponents at the direction of the court conferred and agreed upon 1. Certain procedures and related to the administration of the documents and deposition testimony into evidence for consideration in connection with the confirmation hearing, and 2. Resolution of objections by the plan proponents to the administration of certain documents and deposition testimony. The most recent hearing relating to confirmation of the competing plans was on April 23rd to discuss the resolicitation issues. Tribune and Aurelius also submitted to Judge Carey their amended Chapter 11 plans of reorganization. Tribune filed a second amendment joint plan of reorganization on April 26th, with Aurelius submitting its third amended joint plan of reorganization on April 25th. Judge Carey established a schedule to govern the briefing and closing arguments phase of the hearing. May 11th, competing plan proponents will file opening post-trial briefs. May 20th, the plan proponents will submit reply briefs. May 27th, the plan proponents will file post-trial briefs. June 14th, the court will hear closing arguments. Tribune's Chapter 11 reorganization began in December 2008. W.R. Grace, which marked its 10th year in bankruptcy on April 2nd, 2011, has not yet emerged from Chapter 11. In its earnings report filed April 26 for its first quarter ended March 31, 2011, Grace disclosed to the United States District Court for the District of Delaware has scheduled a hearing on June 28th for an oral argument on appeals to the order confirming its joint plan of reorganization. Several parties have taken an appeal from Judge Judith Fitzgerald's confirmation order on January 31st. The parties include the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors, a group of lenders under the Petition Bank Credit Facility, Gerlach Sealing Technology, Queen in the Rite of Canada, and BNSF Railway Company. The timing of Grace's emergence from Chapter 11 will depend on affirmation of the plan by the District Court and the satisfaction or waiver of the other conditions set forth in the plan, including resolution of any further appeals. Grace said is preparing to consummate the plan as quickly as practical. In Lehman Brothers, 3 Chapter 11 plans are now competing to reorganize the company. The plan covers the spectrum of the issue known as substantive consolidation. One group of creditors led by Paulson & Company presented the plan that calls for substantive consolidation. The newest plan, filed late April by a group including affiliates of Deutsche Bank and Goldman Sachs Incorporated, is not premised on substantive consolidation. Lehman's own plan falls somewhere in the middle in an attempt to compromise with creditors seeking substantive consolidation. In substantive consolidation, the assets derived from all Lehman companies are thrown into one pot and creditors of all the companies are treated alike. Guarantees aren't honored and intercompany debt is disregarded. As a result, some creditor groups may come out better and some worse. There will be a hearing in bankruptcy court on June 28th to consider approval of disclosure statements explaining the plans. Lehman is aiming for a November hearing to approve one of the plans. Lehman has been in bankruptcy since September 15, 2008. Creditors are once again voting out WaMu's modified reorganization plan. Washington Mutual won court approval in March to send out a revised plan to creditors for a vote. The revised plan contains information that spells out financial effect of a potential finding that some or all of the hedge funds profited based on confidential Chapter 11 data. Voting ends May 13th. The hearing for approval of the plan is set for June 6th. Washington Mutual's stay in bankruptcy began in September 2008 when regulators seized its banking unit. SyncMarricon Castilian reports about 5 companies who issued or will issue shares of new common stock upon emergence pursuant to the plans of reorganization they filed in their Chapter 11 cases. These are Satmex, Aliante Holdings, Station Casinos, Orchard Brands, GSC Group, and Wolverine Tube. Satellites Mexicanos S.A. de C.V. filed voluntary petitions for a prepackaged plan of reorganization under Chapter 11 on April 6th. Satmex has reached an agreement with holders of more than two-thirds of the outstanding principal amount of its first priority senior secured notes due 2011 and second priority senior secured notes due 2013 to support the prepackaged plan. The plan contemplates that the recapitalization will be financed with the proceeds of an offering of up to $325 million U.S. dollars in aggregate principal amount of new senior secured debt financing and the proceeds of a rights offering of equity securities in an indirect parent of reorganization Satmex to eligible holders of second priority senior secured notes in an aggregate amount of up to $96.25 million. Eligible holders of second priority senior secured notes will also have the right to invest in their pro rata share of a following on issuance of equity securities in an aggregate amount of up to $40 billion, which may be called by the reorganization company for purposes of funding the construction and launch of Satmex 7. Station Casinos Incorporated subsidiaries Alante Holdings LLC and two of its affiliates will issue shares of new common stock pursuant to the prepackaged Chapter 11 plan of reorganization the companies filed on April 12th. Under the joint plan, reorganization Alante Gaming will distribute to each holder of an allowed Class AGL 1 claim or the holder's designee their pro rata share of 100% of new Alante equity and 100% of new secured Alante debt. Each holder of an allowed Class AGL-1 claim may also elect to exchange its new Alante equity for new secured Alante debt or new secured Alante debt for new Alante equity after solicitation but before the Alante effective date. Alante Gaming in consultation with the Alante administrative agent and the Alante consenting lenders will determine the extent in which the exchanges are possible. Meanwhile, Orchard Brands emerged from bankruptcy on April 25th after receiving confirmation of its plan the week before. The company was in bankruptcy for approximately 3 months. The company's plan provides for the reorganized company's issuance of shares of new common stock. Through the restructuring process, the company was able to eliminate approximately $420 million in debt. Under the plan, lenders with the first priority of repayment are owed about $324 million and will convert their debt into 95% of the reorganized Orchard Brands equity and about $243 million in new loans. Lenders with a secondary priority of repayment are owed about $289 million and will get the remaining 5% of the equity. Unsecured creditors will only see collections by litigation trust funded with $1 million to cover initial expenses. Holders of unsecured notes receive nothing. Kirk and Ellis LLP acted as the Orchard Brands legal counsel, and Alvarez and Marshall and Molis and Company acted as its financial advisors. Approval of the reorganization plan for GSC Group Incorporated could end up involving a little-known procedure called designation, where some votes are disregarded. Others, there might be a stalemate where no plan could be confirmed. Alternatively, GSC's assets might be sold to break the stalemate. GSC characterizes itself as a diversified alternative investment manager. All of the secured lenders of GSC other than Black Diamond Capital Finance LLC filed a Chapter 11 plan in April to prevent a sale of business by the Chapter 11 trustee, James L. Garrity. The plan calls for the reorganized company's issuance of shares of new common stock. The lenders will receive all of the new stock and $160 million in new 10% senior notes to mature in 2026. Unsecured creditors would receive nothing. The plan proponents includes affiliates of Credit Agricole SA, UBS, AG, and General Electric Capital Corporation. Originally named Greenwich Street Capital Partners Incorporated, it was a subsidiary of Travelers Group Incorporated. GSC became the independent in 1998 and at one time had $28 billion of assets under management. Market reverses, termination of some funds, and withdrawal of customers, investments reduced funds under management at the time of the bankruptcy to $8.4 billion. Based in Florham Park, New Jersey, GSC listed assets of $119 million against debt totals $313 million at the time of its bankruptcy filing. Wolverine Tube Incorporated, a producer of copper tubing for manufacturers of heating, ventilation, and cooling equipment, obtained approval of the disclosure statement explaining its prepackaged plan of organization. The disclosure statement approval allows creditors to vote on the plan that was negotiated before the company's Chapter 11 filing in November. The bankruptcy judge has set aside June 2nd for the confirmation hearing on the plan. Before the Chapter 11 case began, the plan was supported by holders of 71% of the $131 million in senior secured notes. Under the plan, secured notes will be converted into almost all of the new common equity plus a new secured note of $30 million. Because of the existing pension plan had to be terminated, the delay in scheduling confirmation was caused by the need to work out a settlement with the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp on terms acceptable to the note holders. The agreement calls for PBGC to be paid $4 million 1 year after the plan becomes effective. In addition to 5% of the new common stock, PBGC will receive another $16 million spread over the following 10 years. If there is a sale of business, PBGC will be prepaid. The petition listed assets of $115 million against debt totaling $237 million. The plan pays general unsecured creditors in full of up to $6.7 million. Existing common and preferred stockholders will receive nothing. Plainfield Asset Management LLC is a signatory to the plan support agreement and both a secured note holder and a preferred stockholder. In May 2009, Wolverine completed an exchange offer where $122 million of maturing 10.5% unsecured notes were exchanged for the 15% senior secured notes that would have matured in 2012. The notes traded on April 11th for $40.19, according to the TRACE, the bond price reported system of the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. The Huntsville, Alabama-based company said revenue for 2010 was around $280 million. That ends the Baird Group Corporate Restructuring Review for April 2011. Brought to you by the editors of the Trouble Company Reporter and Trouble Company Prospector. If you'd like to receive the Troubled Company Reporter for 30 days at no cost and with no strings attached, call Nancy Frazier or Charlie Covell at 240-629-3300 or visit bankrupt.com/free trial and we'll add you to the distribution list. That telephone number again is 240-629-3300 and that web address is bankrupt.com/free trial. Tune in to our next restructuring review on June 16th. Thank you for listening.